Hi, everyone, and welcome to ForageCast, a podcast from Forage Genetics. Each month, we take a deep dive into alfalfa topics and address real on-farm issues that revolve around alfalfa's integration into cropping systems. And now, here's your host, Emily Message.
Welcome to this episode of ForageCast, sponsored by Forage Genetics International. I'm Dr. Emily Message, Technical Support Specialist with Forage Genetics. Today, we are chatting with Dr. David Weekly, Director of Forage Nutrition Research with Forage Genetics. David has had a very successful career focused on evaluations of forage quality and impacts to livestock diets, working for Purina Animal Nutrition for 27 years before moving to work for FGI in 2010. Among the many accomplishments of Dr. Weekly's career, he has helped to develop several laboratory analysis protocols that have helped to better evaluate forage quality. We're so excited to have him here with us today to learn a little more from him about how we can best evaluate the nutritional impacts of alfalfa for livestock diets. Dave, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks, Emily.
So to get us started, let me ask, what do you think are some of the biggest advantages of including alfalfa in a livestock ration?
Well, the obvious reasons are for the protein and fiber content in alfalfa. It is the highest protein-containing forage that we feed to dairy cattle and beef cattle. And furthermore, it has a good amino acid profile for meat and milk production. But there's also some less obvious reasons. One is that alfalfa has a fairly low NDF content. Even though it doesn't have any grain in it, it has an NDF content similar to corn silage. What this does is it makes it less rumen filling, thereby increasing intake potential. Also, the NDF in alfalfa has a very high digestion rate. This means that it can clear the rumen more quickly. This also reduces rumen fill and further increases the intake potential. Now, the reason why alfalfa has such a low NDF content is some of that space obviously is filled with the increased protein content, but it also contains 10% pectin, which is soluble fiber. And the reason this is important is it doesn't ferment to lactic acid like the starch in corn silage would. Consequently, it's less likely to create subacute ruminal acidosis when fed at high levels in dairy rations. Then lastly, alfalfa has a high cation exchange capacity, and that's courtesy of its high content of cations, particularly potassium and magnesium. And what this does is it helps support high milk fat production.
Just a couple follow-up questions on that. So you mentioned that with alfalfa and that lower NDF content, we have the ability to increase intake rate. So what are the benefits of being able to have more feed introduced into that animal? What's the benefits of that increased intake rate?
Yep. So particularly with high-producing dairy cows, it'll allow them to meet their genetic potential more fully. And any time we can do that, we will dilute the maintenance requirement of the animal, which is fairly substantial, thereby making those animals more efficient in producing milk components.
And one of the common comparators that I hear, particularly when we're talking about protein, would be soybean meal. How does that compare in terms of protein, as well as some of these other points that you talked about, to alfalfa?
Yeah, so alfalfa on a dry matter basis, good quality alfalfa, is still going to have about half the protein content of soybean meal. But the amino acid profile is still going to be comparable. It's going to be extremely good quality for milk production. Soybean meal obviously is still going to have a lower cost per unit of protein than alfalfa, but it won't provide all these other benefits that I just described that alfalfa will bring to the diet.
So we all know that alfalfa acres have been declining in recent years. If we're looking at just kind of the nutritional angle, what are some of the biggest challenges for alfalfa in livestock nutrition today? You know, why are we finding it so hard to compete with some of these other ingredients?
Well, while there are many advantages to alfalfa in ruminant diets, many of these advantages are not reflected in these least cost formulation programs that nutritionists use to balance diets. Consequently, alfalfa has a difficult time competing with other forages just strictly on a cost basis, particularly corn silage.
So a lot of it comes down to simply the price per ingredient.
That's right. If you're just looking at it strictly from a least cost formulation basis and all you're doing is reflecting, you know, its protein and its energy content and its mineral content, typically what'll happen is those programs will not want to use alfalfa.
So what aspects are we losing by going off of just that price basis and not looking at some of the other benefits that you mentioned earlier in this recording?
Well, you'll lose all those benefits because you can't reflect them in your least cost formulation programs. So experienced nutritionists typically will recognize all those benefits. Consequently, what they'll tend to do is they'll put minimum use levels of alfalfa in those programs so that it'll force it to go into the in at those levels. Furthermore, there are studies underway to better define what these effective minimum inclusion levels are in the diet.
It kind of surprised me. I expected there to be more research on this topic of including alfalfa in dairy diets and what happens when we remove it to such low levels or even no levels at all. But there really just isn't anything available out there that's been done in the last 10 or 20 years even.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, there were some older work done years ago, but in many cases, they really weren't addressing what kind of the current situation in economics are. And what researchers are looking at now is there a optimum combination between those two forages where we can see positive associative effects?
So they'll be able or looking at it, being able to quantify some of these other benefits that maybe we can't look at just that dollars per pound of ingredient included.
Right. So they may not be able to in these initial studies to determine, you know, what causes these positive benefits, but at least they can determine at what level alfalfa needs to be in the diet in order to get those tangible benefits. And then we can work backwards and try to better define what causes those so that those can then be modeled into these formulation programs so that you can take advantage of them when you hit the optimization buttons in those programs.
So, David, I want to switch gears a little bit now and talk about looking at forage analysis and interpreting forage analysis, because we know that's so important. And it always surprised me how little people sampled for forage quality. And when we're talking about, you know, feeding to animals and determining how much you need to feed, it's really important to know the quality of that forage. So if we're looking at a forage analysis, what are some important components that we would want to be that we would be interested in evaluating?
Right. So, you know, when you get a report back on let's say an alfalfa analysis from any of the commercial labs, it's not unusual to have, you know, up to 2 pages of nutrient analysis being reported. But the nutritionists are mostly interested in kind of a handful of or a subset of those analyses. First off, it's very important to know what the dry matter content of that forage is, particularly if it's alfalfa silage. That way, we make sure that, you know, the proper amount of alfalfa dry matter is being included. Next, they'll be interested in the neutral detergent fiber content or the NDF content of that alfalfa, because this is a measurement of the cell wall content, and this is a measure of the rumen filling capacity of the alfalfa, which, again, is related to maximizing intake potential, as we talked about here previously. Furthermore, there's also interest in the NDF digestibility or NDFD of the alfalfa, and this can be determined a number of ways. There's various static ways to measure it by various intervals of digestibility in vitro or in situ in polyester bags. So you'll see things like NDFD 30 or NDFD 48, or there could be NDF digestibility could also be predicted kinetically, which the formulation models that are based off the CNCPS or Cornell model, they use that approach. Conversely, there's also UNDF or undigested NDF. And again, this can be measured at various time points. This is a direct measure of rumen fill, and typically when it's done by UNDF 30, 48, or 96, that will give, again, a relative measure of alfalfa's filling effect. There's also a measurement called UNDF 240, which is a measure of the total indigestibility of alfalfa that, again, is used in modeling NDF digestibility in these formulation programs that are based off the CNCPS biology. And then there's crude protein. And the subset of that is the rumen undegraded protein fraction and what's remaining, which is the rumen degradable fraction. These are both used to calculate up the metabolizable protein content of alfalfa, which is what's useful to the animal. So that's very important to know. And then there is starting to become more interest in amino acids, in better predicting the supply of amino acids from alfalfa and how that meets the metabolizable amino acid requirement of the animal. Then the nutritionist also is going to be interested in the ASH content, because ASH will dilute all these other nutrients in alfalfa, particularly protein and energy. And that ASH can come not only from the minerals in alfalfa, but also from soil contamination that can occur during harvest. Now, growers are going to be interested in a lot of those components as well. But in addition, they're also going to be interested in some of these calculated indexes, because they're used to rank alfalfa, particularly for sale. So you'll see things like relative feed value, or RFV, relative forage quality, or RFQ, and then finally total digestible nutrients, otherwise known as TDN. And there's various ways to calculate TDN. There's one way where it's just based off the ADF content of alfalfa. That's frequently referred to as the Western States equation. But more commonly and more recently, people will use what's called the summative equation, which is recommended by the National Research Council.
So I want to get into some conversation about some of these calculated indexes here shortly, but just another couple of follow-ups. So you mentioned with the NDFD, there was NDFD 30, NDFD 48. Is one better than the other, or is one more commonly used than the other? I have gotten that question from both producers as well as nutritionists before.
Yeah, so they all have their individual purpose. NDFD 48 was pretty much the initial in vitro digestibility measurement that was introduced into animal nutrition. And that was a NDF digestibility that was done in vitro in a test tube with a buffered rumen inoculum for 48 hours. And it was thought at the time that that represented the average residence time that forages would spend in the rumen, and the resulting value would be similar to what you would see if you measured it in vivo in the animal. Then later, after that 48-hour NDF digestibility was being used, researchers determined that 30-hour NDF digestibility time frames probably better reflected ruminal residence times. So that was picked up by the nutritionist as being more representative of what would occur in the animal. The animal breeders pretty well, or excuse me, the crop breeders or alfalfa breeders pretty much stayed with NDFD 48. But then about 10 years ago, this whole interest in trying to predict NDF digestibility kinetically brought into the vernacular NDFD 96, so a 96-hour digestibility was added, as well as 240 hours. So if you used a combination of the data from an NDFD 48, an NDF 96-hour, and an NDFD 240, then you could actually model a digestibility curve. From that, you could get a rate of digestion. So that's why you see a lot of numbers out there. Like I said, they all have their purpose. I'd say most nutritionists today probably use NDFD 30 to know how to identify alfalfa for use in different production groups. Most plant breeders are probably using NDFD 48. And then you'll have a group of nutritionists that are using formulation models based off the Cornell CNCPS biology that will use NDFD 96 and 240 in addition.
Okay. And I had this question yesterday, actually, at one of my meetings, and maybe this is where we should back up and start from the beginning. So he was getting some lab analyses on the same sample from several different labs. Some lab analyses that he was comparing were NIR, some were wet chem. So let's start off with number one. What are some of the impacts of comparing different analyses, say, from different labs, even if it's the same sample? Is that a good idea, or should that be avoided?
Well, you know, there are two different types of NDFD measurements that you can get on a lab report. Most of the time, it will be by an NIR predicted, by an NIR prediction equation, which is near infrared reflectance. So the sample is it's dried and ground, and it's put into a near infrared reflectance machine. It'll be bombarded with light of various wavelengths, and what's reflected back creates a spectrum. The spectrum's put into prediction equations, and from that you can predict NDF digestibility very quickly and very inexpensively. Those prediction equations, however, are based off of wet lab analysis that had been conducted previously on a vast number of samples, and this can be done either by in vitro analysis, which we talked about a moment ago, which can be done in flasks or tubes with a buffered rumen inoculum, maintained in water baths at a given temperature, or it can be done in these porous polyester bags where you weigh the sample in the bag and put it in the rumen for various lengths of time. So what you're seeing on a report most of the time is going to be by NIR predicted equations. But if you request a in vitro or an in situ analysis, then that can be done, and that's usually referred to as wet chemistry analysis. So going a step further about, you know, sending the same sample to different labs, it is not unusual at all to get slightly different values because every lab has their own techniques. Even though we try to standardize them, every lab will have a slight difference in how they're doing their wet lab analysis. The lab itself will have different conditions, even on a same protocol for that analytical technique. Not a big difference, but it can be, you know, 1 to 2 unit difference in NDF digestibility. And since these NIR prediction equations are based off of that wet lab analysis, then you'll also get similar differences from lab to lab in the NIR predicted values. So, you know, you shouldn't be alarmed by the fact that there are lab to lab differences and they will predict slightly different NDF digestibilities. But what you should do is probably stick with one lab in making your nutritional recommendations so that you're consistent in looking at the NDF and NDF digestibility of those forages and using them consistently and accordingly in your formulation programs.
That's exactly where our discussion went. It's not that necessarily any one lab is wrong. It's just that there are going to be those slight variations. And so instead of trying to compare apples to oranges, having that same lab conduct the analysis for you year in, year out, that's going to be a more fair compare to be able to draw conclusions from.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Now, David, you and your team have helped to develop a high quality forage testing analysis. Can you talk a little bit about that and kind of where that fits into this whole testing conversation?
Yeah, so before we released alfalfa with the Harvextra trait, which is the low lignin trait that allows for harvesting alfalfa of a higher NDF digestibility, we were concerned that the NIR prediction equations for predicting NDF digestibility may not necessarily be responsive in this high region of high NDF digestibility because the database used in building those NIR prediction equations may not have been very robust in those high areas of NDF digestibility. So what we started doing in our lab here at Grace Summit, Missouri, which is the FGI digestibility lab, is we started collecting samples, and they were predominantly Harvextra samples, of very high NDF digestibility, running them through our in vitro digestibility system to generate wet lab analysis that has very high NDF digestibility. And we included these along with the bulk of our NDF digestibility measurements that were more average. And we also had a certain number of samples that were also very low in NDF digestibility. So if you think about it, we had this database of alfalfa samples that had NDF digestibilities of a broad variety, and it would be a normal distribution. What we were trying to do is push the bounds of low and high NDF digestibility as far as we could to create NIR prediction for NDF digestibility that was very robust and very accurate through that whole range of NDF digestibility going from very low to very high, those equations, we package those into a report that we call the Calibrate High Quality Forage Analysis Test. And many people who are listening might have heard of this Calibrate HQ test. Once we had those equations established, what we did was we licensed those to all the major labs that nutritionists use in the marketplace, as well as some of the other labs that are smaller independent labs or some that are affiliated with these larger labs, so that our customers have that are using those laboratories have access to those NIR prediction equations. So that gives them the opportunity to have very accurate measures of their alfalfa, whether it's conventional alfalfa, Roundup Ready, or Harv Extra, over a broad continuum of qualities. And regardless what lab they send it to, they should get values that are very consistent.
Well, as promised, I'm going to circle back around to some other things that you had brought up, one of which was some of those calculated indexes, so RFV and RFQ. And I get this question a lot. I think that there's a little bit of misunderstanding within the marketplace of really the true utility of both of these. So let's just talk a little bit, where did it even start? When did RFV get created? How was it supposed to be used? And then how has RFQ improved upon that?
Okay, so RFV was developed first. It's been around for many years. It is a calculated index. It's calculated from ADF and NDF content of alfalfa. It doesn't reflect digestibility, and typically what it's been used for is to rank hay for sale. However, more recently, RFQ, or relative forage quality, was developed at Wisconsin. It's gaining its popularity with particularly dairy producers and nutritionists, and it does take into account both the content and the digestibility, not only of NDF, but also protein, fat, and non-fiber carbohydrates. And these non-fiber carbohydrates is what's left over after you account for NDF, fat, protein, and ether extract. Now, it can also be used to rank hay for sale by either sellers or nutritionists, but it's mostly used by nutritionists to direct alfalfa use in cow production groups. So typically, hay that has a high RFQ will have a high digestibility, and nutritionists will tell producers to use that in their high group pens because it'll be less filling and will be less likely to reduce intake and more likely to allow those high producing cows to reach their high production potential.
And both are still used in the marketplace. We see RFV still commonly being used by brokers and some groups within the market. I still highly recommend, whenever possible, to use RFQ, because I think it gives a much more complete evaluation. Like you said, it builds upon that RFV number, but it includes things like digestibility. And I think that you really get a better picture of the overall quality. The issue that I've run into is not every lab is going to offer RFQ, and it's not offered with a lot of the standard packages that people that you usually pay for. But it really is going to be a better indicator of that forage quality. So whenever possible, I think that using RFQ instead of RFV really is going to be better in that conversation.
Yes, I agree. And particularly for alfalfa growers who work very hard to harvest alfalfa of very high quality, meaning very low NDF and very high NDFD, RFQ will do a better job of reflecting that than RFV will.
One other topic that I wanted to bring up was TDN, or total digestible nutrients, because there's a lot of chatter in the marketplace as to how this should be used, how can it be used, and how accurate is it? So you had mentioned earlier, there's a couple different ways to evaluate TDN. Can we dive into that just a little bit more? And, you know, you've mentioned the Western equation, there's a summative equation. How are those going to be different?
Mm-hmm. Certainly. You know, TDN is an energy term. And it's mostly been replaced by other terms like metabolizable energy in Net Energy for Lactation around the United States, but it's still used as a predominant energy term in the western part of the United States, and particularly California. As a consequence, you don't see TDN talked about much in the Midwest or in the eastern U.S., even though TDN by the summative equation is actually used to calculate metabolizable energy in NEO. It is a base component of that equation. But when you get further west, particularly in California, TDN is what's used to not only balance for energy in lactating dairy rations, but it's also used to rank alfalfa and most forages. So there are two ways to calculate it. The convenient way is to is an equation based off of ADF, which is called a Western State Equation. It's still real popular because it's real easy to do, very quick, but not very robust because it's just based off one component. What's much more robust and much more accurate and responsive is TDN by the summative equation. And what it does is it takes into consideration digestible NDF, digestible non-fiber carbohydrates, digestible protein, and digestible ether extract. So it's still much more robust to calculate TDN by the summative equation.
Great. Thanks, David. And one final reminder for our listeners, we can talk all day long about what quality parameters to look at, what analysis to use, but taking a good sample is the start of all of this. And so you want to make sure that you're sampling accurately, you're sampling throughout, whether it be a silage pile, whether it be a stack of hay, make sure to get that representative sample and take enough subsamples too. Usually we're talking about with number of bales. My recommendation is at least 10% of the total number of bales, but that's going to be so critical in getting useful information from any of these forage quality analyses. So David, I want to say thank you so much for joining us today. I know I learned a lot, as I always do, talking to you. Really appreciate you taking the time, and thanks again.
Yep. Emily, thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, Emily. And thanks to you, our listeners. If you'd like more information about forage genetics or any of the information you heard about today, please contact your local alfalfa seed dealer or visit our website at www.foragegenetics.com. Until next time, thank you for listening. Because of factors outside forage genetics control, such as weather, soil, planting, and product application, individual results cannot be predicted or guaranteed by Forage Genetics International. Always read and follow all label instructions.